Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, Team Canada names Doug Armstrong its GM for the next Olympics. But who's going to coach?
The Buffalo Sabres are hot. Are their playoff hopes alive?
And joining us from Nashville, we've got Predators site editor Emma Lingen on one of the hottest teams coming out of the West.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trikos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. Welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. I'm Michael Trikos. With me, as always, is Ryan Kennedy. And Ryan, trade deadline has passed.
Yes.
You can now move on to bigger and better things like playoff races. And if you're Team Canada, the general manager of the team just gets announced, Doug Armstrong. Not really a surprise. I think a lot of us assumed that Doug was just going to be back, considering that he was already named the GM of the last Olympic team. And what's kind of stood out with me was that he's not going to only be the GM of the next Olympics, but we're talking that Four Nations tournament,
right,
the World Championships, the whole kit and caboodle, if you like. I guess raises the question, who's going to coach this team?
Yeah, and they have said that it doesn't necessarily have to be the same coach for all events, right?
So yeah, I would imagine that the World Championships is going to have a different one, right?
Very much so. But even, you know, like if the Four Nations, if it doesn't go well, maybe they go in a different direction or who knows. But it feels like Tampa Bay's John Cooper is kind of the obvious choice just based on his international resume, his NHL resume. The fact that he just seems to be a guy that gets the most out of his players and famously has won literally at every level he has coached, going back to AHL, junior, the man has won it all.
Roller hockey, I think, even too.
Very possibly. Yeah, I'm not sure. But, you know, with John Cooper, you have a winner. You have a guy that clearly can take the temperature of a room and deal with a lot of stars. If you think about all those, you know, I'll call them vintage Lightning teams. It was only 2 or 3 years ago. But, you know, those really powerhouse ones where you had, you know, Stamkos, Hedman, Vasilevsky, Kucherov, Point, you know, all in their primes, all at the top of their powers. And Cooper was able to harness that in the right direction. So he would be an obvious favorite, I would think.
Yeah, Cooper was going to be the head coach had NHLers gone to Beijing in 2022. Interesting thing about Cooper, though, you're not going to have Stamkos on this team, I don't believe.
Probably not.
You're probably going to have Braden Point, though.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just one Tampa Bay player?
Yeah.
Is that enough? Because when I'm looking at the other options, and I put this out on Twitter, who will be the next coach for the Olympic team? 51.5% pick John Cooper. This is after literally 2 hours of it being up. 823 votes at the time. Second place was Rod Brind'Amour, which was kind of surprising. Third, Bruce Cassidy. And then the fourth choice, Jared Bednar. And Bednar's kind of an interesting one because you know Nate MacKinnon's going to be there.
For sure.
You know Cale Makar's going to be there. Mm. And probably Cale Makar's defense partner in Devon Toews. What do you think about adding a Bednar to the coaching staff at the very least, just because you're going to have two centerpieces of Team Canada in MacKinnon and Makar?
I'm totally for that. I think Jared Bednar has demonstrated how good a coach he can be. And it's interesting, I talked to him earlier this season about how he grew with MacKinnon, Makar, Rantanen, guys like that, where you got to remember when he took over the Avs, they had one of the worst seasons in post-lockout history, went really young, and then built up organically and became Stanley Cup champions. So not only were MacKinnon and Makar growing, but Bednar was growing as an NHL coach as well. So I think he's gone through the struggles, and he knows how to put together a champion. So I would say, you know, he would be a great associate coach. I would also say Rick Tocchet, you know.
It's a good one.
Great motivator, you know, a guy that players really respect, former NHLer himself. Rod Brind'Amour, I think he could be the head coach, he could be an associate coach. You really have kind of an embarrassment of riches when it comes to bench boss minds in Canada.
It's funny, when you're talking about Bednar, I just looked him up. This is his eighth season in Colorado.
Yeah.
Why does it feel like he just got there like 3 or 4 years ago?
Because time is a lie.
Yeah, that darn COVID. the other guy, let's just... Before we wrap this one up, Bruce Cassidy, I love him being involved in the coaching staff for the simple reason is, you know, the Boston Bruins play a certain style when he was their head coach. Since going to Vegas, they've become, well, I think they're always a good, strong defensive team because of what they have.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a Team Canada that might be really thin in goal. Like, I don't even know who the number one goaltender is going to be on this team.
It might be Aiden Hill.
Yeah, so that's even, it stresses the importance of playing a team defense even more so. So I could see Cassidy being there because, you know, if he's on, if he's involved in the coaching staff, working just maybe with the defense, you're going to have a strong defensive team. A team that is strong right now, defensively, offensively, whatever you want to say, and I don't know if this guy is going to figure into the Team Canada roster, but ever since Bowen Byram went from Colorado, Jared Bednar's Colorado Avalanche, to the Buffalo Sabres, what a turnaround the Buffalo Sabres have had. And just to remind you, like, it was a one-for-one, basically, trade. It was Mittelstadt for Bowen Byram.
Yep.
The Avs get a second-line center in Mittelstadt, who, you know, much needed on that roster. But when you're talking about Bowen Byram and what he's been able to do for the Buffalo Sabres, in four games so far, the team is 3-1-0, and Byram's got 3 goals and 5 points with a plus-5 rating. Is it too early to say this is basically the most impactful deal of the trade deadline?
You know what? It's going to be one of them for sure, right? Because we're going to talk later in the show about Evgeny Kuznetsov in Carolina.
Another impact move.
Another impact move there. But Bowen Byram, yeah, what a fit in Buffalo. And, you know, it's not like they don't have skill in the back end. Rasmus Dahlin leads them in scoring. You know, Owen Power is a tremendous two-way defenseman. But Bowen Byram, you know, coming from a situation in Colorado where, you know, you can get a lot of confidence because the players around you are so good. You can learn from guys like Cale Makar and Devon Taves. On the other hand, you were never going to be the power play quarterback in Colorado. You were never going to be a 24, 25-minute-a-night defenseman in Colorado. And hey, maybe in Buffalo he doesn't get up there either. But I will say, a little more opportunity to shine for the Sabres, and Byram has definitely done that so far. And it's interesting, I mean, the Sabres, they've got some ways to go, right? I mean, they're not in the wild card yet. There's teams they have to leapfrog. They do not have games in hand, but they're in such a good spot right now. And whether it's Byram or Ukko-Pekka Luokkonen in net, they're getting performances at key times. Everyone is playing as a team. You know, Don Granato, it's like the system is working. They're a lot better defensively this year. It's funny, they've taken a step back offensively, but Granato, you know, was telling our Buffalo Sabres team site writers that if you want to win, you do it through defense. We know you guys can score now. Let's lock it down. They're doing that a lot better this year. And with UPL in net, things are coming together at the right time. So who knows, Sabres fans, maybe not a lost season as we thought just a month ago.
No, totally. And heading into Saturday afternoon's game against the Detroit Red Wings, who the Sabres are sort of trying to catch in the standings. They're 3 points back of the Red Wings heading into that game, 3 points back of a wild card spot heading into the game. A couple things, like we're going to talk about Detroit and just kind of like Detroit was heading into this game on a 7-game losing streak. But further to Buffalo, this is only their second 3-game winning streak all season.
Wow.
And you know, they've only had 4 2-game winning streaks, so they haven't been able to put together strong performances. That being said, their other 3-game winning streak happened in February, and they had a 2-game winning streak in February. So this could be a team that just heats up in the second half of the season. A team that is cooling down, however, is the Red Wings, or are the Red Wings. Like I mentioned, a 7-game losing streak. Prior to that, they were on a 6-game winning streak, so it has been a bit of a roller coaster for them. Are you getting sort of worried about where the Red Wings are kind of steered right now? And is a lot of the blame really kind of falling on Alex Lyon's shoulders? Because this guy, 923 save percentage in January, guy's rocking an 865 percentage in February and March so far.
Wow. Well, okay, I'll say this.
What's going on, Ryan?
I'm going to go a little goodwill hunting here. Alex Lyon is not your fault. You are not supposed to be an NHL starter. You're supposed to be an NHL backup. And we've seen some very good Alex Lyon, even last year with the Florida Panthers.
Got them into the playoffs.
He got them into the playoffs, but he's not a long-term solution, right? And with Dylan Larkin out of the lineup, the Red Wings have spiraled, no doubt about it. I think a lot of things are catching up to the Red Wings right now, and I mean, the game against Buffalo is going to be like the game of their season, right? Yeah. I mean, if that losing streak continues, I think Detroit is going to be turfed. But there's just some things where you look at that lineup and it's like, okay, well, Alex DeBrincat was a great add, and you know the veterans were performing, Dylan Larkin amongst them. But Moritz Seider is just taking on too much responsibility, right? Like the matchups he's facing, the minutes he's taking on. I mean, it's great for a young defenseman to get those challenges, but if you're trying to get it into a playoff spot, you got to give the kid some help. You got to give him some breaks here and now. And I guess the Red Wings coaching staff don't feel like they have other options to do so. And, you know, you look at that group, and it wasn't the most intimidating, let's face it, even coming into the season on paper.
No.
But they got to figure out a way to turn it around because there's too many hungry teams for that wild card spot, whether it's the Islanders, whether it's Buffalo coming up behind them.
Capitals.
The Capitals are still in it. So, yeah, Detroit, they got to figure it out quick.
I think people forget, or these teams forget, that they were supposed to be sellers at the deadline. Or they were sellers at the deadline, and they're supposed to sink down the standings after selling.
Yeah, really.
Like, what gives here?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, the second half of the season, obviously, these playoff races are going to come into a huge, huge focus. Another thing that's kind of getting our focus right now is Pittsburgh Penguins. They're supposed to give out Jaromír Jágr bobbleheads the other night.
Yeah.
What happened, Ryan?
apparently, they were stolen.
Apparently,
they were stolen.
Apparently, in question marks or quotation marks here.
I am of two minds of this because, on one hand, I'm like, is this just a social media hoax? You know, because there was a Jaromír Jágr video that came out very soon after the announcement that they were stolen, him in a truck. It was very slickly done. It was very fun.
He was grinning kind of devilishly.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, the San Jose Sharks mascot tweeted out something with, like, what was clearly, like, an older Jágr bobblehead. Maybe it was a Florida Panthers one. I don't know. It was, like, a Navy helmet. On the other hand, like, if you cancel a bobblehead night, like, that's a big deal. Like, people bought tickets. Or, as you were pointing out before the show, if you're a season ticket holder,
you circle
those bobblehead nights, you want that little trinket. So I doubt the Penguins would, like, you know, mess around with their fans that way. But I'm just sort of like, what do you do with 17,000 Jaromír Jágr bobbleheads? Like, do you ransom them? Like, what's the end game here?
Do you have a bobblehead that you've got, like, at your on your desk at home?
I don't actually have any bobbleheads.
Oh, really? No. I got a Matt Sundin one because people come into my office and they just assume it's me. it's Matt Sundin, late 30s.
Right. No helmet?
No helmet. And I used to have a Doug Gilmore and a Wendell Clark one that they gave out because, you know, when you're covering a team, you get the bobblehead sometimes if you're at those games. They don't do them anymore, though.
No.
But both of those bobbleheads since broke. They're top-heavy.
That's fair.
There you go. Yeah. Speaking of top-heavy, a top-heavy Hart Trophy race, Ryan.
Yes.
Who do you got right now? It seems like we do this every week or so. And
yes.
It seems like the order sort of changes.
A little bit, but I feel... And it's funny, because Colorado and Edmonton play tonight. That's going to be like...
That might be
must-see.
My favorite matchup down the stretch.
Yes. And it's going to be a very nice, like, microcosm of the Hart Trophy race, because Nathan MacKinnon is on an absolute heater.
Yeah.
I believe it's 14 points in his last five games or something like that. It's something wild. So he has surpassed Nikita Kucherov for the scoring race.
Yep.
So Nathan MacKinnon, Art Ross right now. But Connor McDavid, I mean, when you look at his points per game, it's basically the same as MacKinnon and Kucherov. He obviously missed a couple of games earlier in the season. But where would the Edmonton Oilers be without Connor McDavid? And then I'll toss a third name in there, Connor Hellebuyck.
Yep.
Where would the Winnipeg Jets be without Connor Hellebuyck in net? And yeah, okay, the Vezina Trophy is for the goalies, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, if you put on such a great performance, we've seen it before. I mean, it can happen. We see it with the Conn Smythe as well. So, for me, it's still Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that Avs, the forward attack, it's not what it used to be.
That Avs lineup on the forward, amongst their forwards on paper, does not, it shouldn't be as good as...
It is.
The Avs shouldn't be as good as they are.
Right.
Because I'm looking at their lineup right now, and you've got, obviously, MacKinnon on the top line with Rantanen and Nikushkin, and they have just been deadly.
Yeah.
Further to MacKinnon, 32 straight games where he's had a point at home. Like, it's insane what he's doing. But after that, it's like, your second line doesn't scare me. It's like Mittelstadt with a couple of the new guys they picked up at the deadline. And the third line, again, Parise's out, Lekkonen's out. Obviously, they've been missing Landeskog for the whole season. Yeah. So it really, you know, for me, I'm with you. MacKinnon, 100%. I don't think, even if he gets passed in the scoring title by McDavid, and don't be afraid, or don't be surprised that McDavid ends up passing both Kucherov and MacKinnon. But for me, it goes MacKinnon, then it goes McDavid, and I'm going to say Auston Matthews is my number three guy right now.
Fair.
And you guys got 55 goals.
Yeah, he could still get 70.
He still could. He's got nine more than Reinhardt and Hyman, and, you know, further to what you said about McDavid, and he turned Hyman into, like, what's going to be a 50-goal scorer this year.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
I will say, though, you know, in the interest, you know, I mean, David Pastrnak is still, I think, in the conversation. With Nikita Kucherov, it feels like if he can just take over, even more so than he has.
He's got 112 points right now.
He does, yeah. But, I mean, Tampa Bay, they need to be... This is my personal thing. It's like you have to be a playoff team if one of your players is going to win the Hart.
Yeah.
So Tampa Bay, you know, they're in the wild card right now, so they're not comfortable, but they're there. Kucherov has to continue driving them forward because the competition is so stiff. So I think if he were to win the Art Ross and Tampa Bay makes the wild card, I would consider Kucherov in that mix, but it's still MacKinnon. It feels like it's his year.
I'm with you, and we always talk about narratives, and it's time for MacKinnon to get a.
Yeah. Usually, the Norris is the narrative one. I kind of like to joke about that. It feels like, and it's not planned or anything, but it just feels like voters are like, oh, so and so doesn't have one yet. He should get one, and then. Unfortunately, it's a game of musical chairs. Like, Shea Weber never won a Norris.
Yeah.
Feels like he should have at some point, but it was just never, quote, his turn.
All right. Well, speaking of awards, is it time to give Evgeny Kuznetsov maybe the Comeback Player of the Year award based on what he's done in, you know, since being on the player assistance program, placed on waivers, sent to the minors, goes to Carolina, and granted, he's only got one goal since joining the Carolina Hurricanes, but... Here's a stat that I'm sure Rod Brind'Amour likes. Kuznetsov is a plus, I think he's a plus three right now. I think last time I checked, and this guy was a plus three after four games, and he was a minus combined 37 in his past two seasons in Washington.
Yeah.
So, we talked about Bowen Byram's impact. What do you like about Kuznetsov's impact so far?
Well, I like that everything is so positive right now. And, you know, we've talked about this off the air before. Evgeny Kuznetsov's, like, one of my favorite players to talk to over the years.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a really sort of, like, joyous, fun guy. And, you know, he went through a lot of personal struggles and, you know, he has demons. It's like... Should we be talking Masterton? Maybe it's not enough of a track record this year. Maybe it's next year if he has like a full season. But, you know, he just seems to be in such a good place. And it's so nice to see. And, you know, in Carolina, he doesn't have to be the guy.
No.
But, you know, the goal he scored, you could see, even though he had only been there for like a week or something, like the rest of the Canes were so pumped for him. And they did the storm surge afterwards, right? You know, I think I saw Freddie Anderson
sort of
do the Birdman.
They're becoming my favorite team right now.
Yeah.
That's weird. I'm not supposed to have favorite teams, but I got a spot for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, it feels like there's so much positive momentum in Carolina.
Totally.
And, you know, in getting Kuznetsov in the deadline, you know, Freddie Anderson's back from his blood clots and playing well, so that's another, like, nice story. And it's hard not to root for Rod Brind'Amour because he's such a motivator and he means so much to that franchise as the captain of their first Stanley Cup. So... I mean, Kuznetsov, it just feels like the fit was perfect in Carolina. It was just like change of scenery was all he needed. And hopefully this is like act two for his career because it's you know, when things are going great, he's been super fun to watch.
I love this quote from him. Can I read this? I understand why I'm here and why this team brought me in, says Kuznetsov, not just to be the funny guy who smiles.
They
need us to perform, and they need us to eventually get the points and goals to help the team. I love that. You know, this guy is already completely buying in. And we talked to Ryan Henkel, our Carolina Hurricanes site editor, last week about this. And, you know, he was hugging Brind'Amour when he got there. He was hugging all the teammates. So how can you not root for this guy? And, you know, that Carolina Hurricanes team, I know we've kind of talked about, you know, who is going to come out of the East, and we both really like Carolina.
Yeah.
How can you not like their top three lines when you've got Aho, Svechnikov, and Teravainen as your top line? Your second line, now you've got Kuzi with Gensel and Nekash, and third line with, you know, Jordan Staal, Martinook, and Seth Jarvis.
Yeah.
Wow. Those, yeah, that's a 1-2-3 punch.
Yeah, definitely. That's the kind of team where... And with Gensel coming in, you know, this is something that I've sort of thought about over the years. It's like, okay, you're in a playoff series. It's game seven. You need a goal. Who gets that goal? For a lot of teams, you have that answer, right? Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, if it was like Tampa back in their heyday, it was like Stamkos or even Kucherov, yeah, right? Like, there was a couple of options.
Toronto, you got Matthews, you got Nylander.
Yeah, if you're Edmonton, it's McDavid or Draisaitl. Those are the guys where it's like, I want the puck on my stick. For Carolina, you know, because Aho's more of a distributor, you know, and Svechnikov has had some injuries, but now it's like, okay, it's the playoffs. Who's going to get that goal for us? Well, it's Jake Gensel. Like, yeah, that's what he does, yeah, is he comes through in the clutch. So it just feels like what was already a very good team got more pieces in Gensel and Kuznetsov to just make sure that all the bases are covered.
All right. Let's go to our... A fun little kind of game here. Our upside down power rankings. You want to kick this one off, right?
Yeah. Okay. So this is my concept. Is, you know, we're past the trade deadline, and it's funny too because, you know, we talked about the gold rule on a previous show where, you know,
right,
should
the,
you
PWHL.
Know, yeah. So if you're, you know, if you're going for the first pick overall, it's about who accrues more points after a certain point in the season versus who's just dead last.
Yeah.
So what I was kind of thinking of was every year we see a bad team or two get hot at the end.
Yeah.
And the Ottawa Senators have definitely been in this category before. I know it drives their fans crazy because it kind of gives them false hope over the summer and be like, oh, look how well we finished.
The Buffalo Sabres were the kings of this.
Buffalo Sabres do it as well. Yeah, and it basically masks the previous deficiencies because, you know, you might be playing other bad teams. You might be playing playoff teams that are resting their starters or, you know, playing their backup goalie. And it also just kind of, like, caves in your draft lottery odds. So
there's a reason we call it garbage time.
It's garbage
time.
It
doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter. I actually rewatched Meatballs the other day with Bill Murray. It just doesn't matter.
I love that scene. I think he was running through the Muskokas on that scene.
He totally was. Yeah, it was filmed in Halliburton.
There you go.
So I propose to you, what are your, and we can go one for one here, which are the teams most likely to, say, tank their tanking odds in the next few weeks by winning games that don't matter?
You know what? I'm going to start with the Montreal Canadiens. I think they're
very
gonna,
good.
I think they're going to be the biggest offenders of this. And, you know, for a team that had the first overall pick just a couple of years ago, you'd think, okay, maybe they don't need to be in the bottom five.
Mm-hmm.
No, they need to be in the bottom five.
Yes.
Because Slafkovský wasn't a legit number one overall pick. Sorry, Montreal fans. Hate me all you want.
He's not a McDavid. He's not a Matthews. No.
Last year, they got David Reinbacher at number five. Fine. That's a start.
Yeah.
But you go before the Slafkovský draft. Like, they drafted 31st overall, 16th overall, 15th overall, and then third overall with Kokkonen. So you haven't really accrued enough pieces there. I know you've got Caulfield. I know you've got some pieces on the back end that are... that could grow up to be really impact defensemen.
Yeah.
But you need another top five pick, 100%.
Yeah. You do not have a number one center in your system, and you do not have a true number one center in your lineup right now. Like, Nick Suzuki, to me, is like a 1B.
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah.
On a good team, you might even be your number three center, I'm sorry to say. Like,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. Another team I'm looking at is Seattle.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, there's... kind of in the wild card hunt, not really at this point. It feels like the West is like, it might be done already. You know, you look at the wild card.
Yeah.
Vegas, ironically, right now is at the second wild card spot. They're 4 points up on Minnesota. Vegas has a game in hand. And Vegas is, I mean, they're going to get better as, you know, people get healthy.
Is Vegas in danger of missing out? Like, it's too early for that conversation.
They've only won 3 of their past 10, but I'm not too concerned just because They're not a bad team. You know, they've gone through a rough patch, and Mark Stone's obviously out of the lineup, but I think they're going to be okay there. But you look at Seattle, and, you know, they're kind of in that mushy middle where they're not a wild card team at this point. They're too far behind. But their draft lottery odds are not going to be great. And at this point, they're 9 points clear of Arizona. And then you get into, like, Anaheim, Chicago, and San Jose, who are just way behind everybody else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of the bottom feeder teams in the past 10, Seattle has the best record. So they're going in, quote-unquote, the wrong direction by kind of going in the right direction. And I know for Ron Francis, it's like he wants to build a winning culture. He wants a veteran squad. You know, the fact that they held on to Jordan Eberle.
I was going
to
say, they weren't even sellers at the deadline.
They weren't sellers at the deadline. But I would maintain, I thought they did an amazing job in the draft the past couple of years. But I want to see more picks, higher picks. Mm-hmm. And particularly, you know, they have two second rounders, two third rounders this year on top of their first rounder. The closer that is to the front, the better.
Right.
Especially with the second and third rounder of their own, because otherwise it's the Rangers and Leafs they have. So I think Seattle, yeah, they're just in that murky middle right now that doesn't help.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say that the Ottawa Senators are going to be one of those teams that completely screw up their draft and get a higher spot in the standings than they probably need.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be valuable for this team.
I see where you're going with this. I like it.
I think there are certain teams where enough is enough and you have to kind of show some forward momentum.
Yep.
I don't think the Ottawa Senators need another top five pick. I think they just need to start acting like contenders and take that step forward. And if it is in the final month of the season and we call it garbage time, so be it. There are examples, and none of them come to mind right away, but you know, maybe there is some momentum to be had if you finish the season strong that you can kind of lead into next year, because it's been an awful season for the Ottawa Senators. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, whatever is going to fix them is not going to be in this year's draft.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, because I think this is a good time for Shane Pinto to continue to get his bearings back after missing the first half with that gambling-related suspension. And if you're Ottawa, again, looking to the future, in that garbage time, yeah, you don't get the best sense of what's going on, but what's your goaltending situation? Are you happy with it? I mean, Jonas Korpisalo is locked up long-term, but is there a move that can be made? You know, Anton Forsberg has 1 year on his contract after this season, but $2.75 million cap hit, you can figure out a trade with that. That's easily movable for a guy that you picked up on waivers originally. So I see that.
And let's not forget, Tim Stützle is 21 years old. Jake Sanderson's 21. Mm-hmm. Even Brady Tkachuk, only 23 years old.
Totally.
This is developmental time for these guys. So, you know, if they can get more minutes and, you know, put some kind of currency in the bank in terms of their play, I think that's going to bode well for the future, because you have the pieces there that are going to lead you into a playoff spot. It's just a matter of, you know, convincing yourselves that you're worthy for that playoff spot and kind of doing what Detroit's done all year and what Buffalo's doing now, which is, you know, at least getting close and hovering around that playoff spot.
Playing meaningful games in late March, very crucial. And I'll just add one more, the Arizona Coyotes. This is a team that pretty good prospect pipeline, but if they could get if they get first overall, obviously a huge prize in Max Celebrini, but if they could get somebody that helps sooner than later, like somebody of that caliber, maybe even another huge Russian. They had two last year in the first round. There's Anton Siliev, who could be second overall this year on defense. Maybe that's the style they go, but Arizona tends to be plucky at different times in the season. So I could see them going on a run. And
what happened to Arizona? They were right there like a month ago or so.
Yeah. You know what? I think
they're just not that good.
They were playing over their heads.
Yeah.
Essentially.
They're just not that good.
They weren't good enough. Yep.
All right, a team that has been really good, especially since the trade deadline and going into the trade deadline, part of the reason why they didn't trade UC Saros, has been the Nashville Predators. After the break, we've got our Predators site editor, Emma Lingen, to join us. What are we going to ask her? We're going to ask her about the Red Hot Preds. We're going to ask her some maybe favorite hot chicken spots.
Some Red Hot Chicken as well.
All right.
Let's do it.
Stick with us. Hi, I'm Michael Trikos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show, and we're happy to be joined now by Nashville Predators site editor Emma Lingen. And Emma, it's been a fun season to be covering this Nashville Predators team. Like heading into the trade deadline, a lot of us were wondering if this team was going to be possibly sellers, and you know they didn't sell their assets, and probably that's a good decision based on how hot they've been, and it very much looks like the playoffs are going to be a possibility. What can you tell us about this recent run that Nashville's on?
Yeah, I would say it's fun now. It hasn't been fun the whole season. I can honestly say I don't think that any of us would have really expected to even be having this conversation about this Predators team right now. But it really has been pretty remarkable what they've been able to do over the last 13 games. You know, they kind of limped into the All-Star break and they limped out of it. They still weren't looking that good. And then they had the 9-2 loss to Dallas that really seemed like kind of a turning point for this team. And then as far as what they were going to do at the trade deadline, Barry Trotz kind of said, you know, that's up to them. That's up to the players. They're going to dictate what we do here. And they dictated it. They started winning games and not just winning games. I mean, winning against really challenging opponents and winning handily. And finally, everything's kind of starting to come together for them. And so that led to the decision at the trade deadline, like you said, to really not mess with much. You know, they kind of became buyers in a sense, but only in the sense that, you know, they picked up a couple guys, Anthony Beauvillier and Jason Zucker, on expiring contracts. You know, they're veterans in the league, they've got playoff experience, but they don't come with long-term commitments. And so it's both of those pickups are things, they're assets they were able to get without giving up too much or mortgaging their future, but who could potentially help this team as they make a little playoff run here.
Emma, I understand that the rock band U2 played an outsized role in Nashville's turnaround. What's the story there?
Yeah, that's kind of become the running joke all season now. After the 9-2 loss to Dallas that I mentioned, the team was supposed to go on the road. Well, they first went to St. Louis, and then they were supposed to go straight from St. Louis to Vegas. They were going to have an off day there, and they were going to go see U2 at the Sphere in Vegas. And then after the loss to Dallas was definitely the tipping point, but it was really, you know, kind of how the team had performed up until that point. And the leadership, management, Barry Trotz, Andrew Brunette, all kind of said, nope, we're going to go play this game in St. Louis, and then we're going to come back home and we're going to practice and we're not going to go to the concert. And so then, of course, that's when they started going on this run. They did win in St. Louis, but they came back to Nashville to practice for a day before they went back out to Vegas. And then they just kept winning and just kept getting points. And so it's kind of become a running joke now. Like, even if they'll be playing at home, if there's a concert coming up at Bridgestone Arena, you know, the media will kind of joke like, oh, the Preds are playing like they don't want to miss the Pitbull concert this weekend or whatever show is going on. So whether that alone is really what kind of motivated this team, I'm not sure. I think it was more the message that it sent that, hey, you can't keep putting out this kind of subpar performance and not face any consequences for it. So it was a bold decision by the leadership and the management, but right now it seems to be paying off.
Well, some tough love, and just it proves my point, Ryan. Nothing good can ever come from going to a U2 concert.
There you go.
Let's speak about Andrew Brunette, who's been, you know, first year there in Nashville. Obviously you got Barry Trotz as first year GM in Nashville as well, but what's been the difference between going from John Hines to an Andrew Brunette?
there's a lot of differences. I mean, primarily in just the style of play and the system that they run. I mean, Andrew Brunette is a much more offensive-minded coach, whereas John Hines focused a little bit more on defense and goaltending, which had kind of been the Predators' bread and butter for a long time, that they were known for these strong defensive teams that were, you know, physical and tough to play against, but they never were really known for having this high octane offense. And all of a sudden now they do. And a lot of it has to do with the top line of Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, Philip Forsberg, who have just been unbelievable for this team this season. And for a while, it seemed like they were kind of a one line team. And now we're starting to see depth scoring too. Andrew Brunette's system is not for the faint of heart. I can say that. It's definitely something that's proven to be challenging to pick up on the fly. I mean, it took this team, we can see this, it took this team about 60 games to finally get it and finally start clicking. And it's, you know, it's very fast. It's very aggressive. It's about taking away space. It's about, you know, creating turnovers. It's about moving the puck as quickly and as often as possible. And so it's a lot, especially for a team, any of the guys who had been here last season with John Hines, you know, it was a lot more on defense, and now the focus is much more on offense. And so, I mean, we're seeing the results of that, and they're actually scoring goals now, but I couldn't tell you how many, I've covered this team for a couple of years, and I couldn't tell you how many last season, how many losses they had that were 2-1, 3-2, like 3-1. And it was just, they weren't volume goal scorers. And now we're kind of starting to see a little bit more of that.
You know, one player that's always been good for the Preds is goaltender UC Saros. And at one point there were rumors that maybe Nashville would move him at the deadline. This is obviously when things weren't going as well. I'm curious, Emma, what was the local reaction to those rumors? Because Saros has been such a staple in net for them for so long now.
I would say, you know, they were pretty mixed. I think the reason that they weren't completely and totally, you know, against trading UC Saros was the fact that they do have Yaroslav Askarov, who's just been a superstar down in the AHL with the Milwaukee Admirals for them. And so I think people are really getting excited about this kid, and, you know, they love Saros, and he's obviously an incredibly important part of this team. And Barry Trotz has said that, you know, he remains committed to trying to sign him and keep him long-term if that is possible. But I think a combination of the way things were going for this team, you know, they weren't winning, they weren't playing well, knowing that UC Saros was the guy who was going to get the biggest return theoretically on the trade market, and knowing that you have Askarov down at the AHL level who would come up, I think that was kind of the general local reaction that people, you know, they'd love to keep them both, but the arrival of, or the impending arrival of Askarov kind of makes it feel not as much of a loss to lose Saros. Now that's the local reaction. You didn't ask for my reaction, but I'll tell you, I think I think losing Saros would be a much, much bigger loss than a lot of people realize, I think. And, you know, Askarov has been fantastic down in Milwaukee. He gives us all ulcers when we watch him play, because he comes out of the net so far and makes all these crazy plays. And, you know, he's very fun to watch. But, you know, I think what Barry Trotz said at the trade deadline is, you know, with Saros, he's got another year on his contract. We have the luxury of time, so let's use it. We're not in a rush to make a decision about him right now. And then once the team started winning, obviously, Saros is your best shot at making a playoff run here. And he's the kind of guy, he's the kind of goalie who could steal a series for you. So I think that kind of change of events, that combination has kind of, you know, obviously about a week before the deadline was when Trotz said, okay, we're keeping him. And, you know, I think New Jersey has already come out and said that they're going to make another run at him in the offseason, but it's it's one of those things where Trotz knows how valuable he is to this team, and so he has set the price very high for a reason.
All right. Emma, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk food, because Ryan and I are huge foodies, especially when we're covering a team on the road. Let's talk hot chicken there, Emma. For me, I can't go to Nashville without going to Hattie B's. I don't care how long the lineup is. I don't know about you, Ryan, but you know, name your favorite hot chicken place, Emma. And am I wrong in, you know, waiting in line for sometimes 2 hours to get Hattie B's?
See, that's a very tourist thing to do. I think this is no knock on Hattie B's. It's no knock on Hattie B's. They're great. Is it my favorite hot chicken place in Nashville? I would say no. I personally prefer Prince's. So next time you're in Nashville, you should go to Prince's. Hattie B's is the big tourist spot, though. So, and they have one. They have one on Broadway that's right across from Bridgestone Arena. So it's convenient. I get that, too. But, yeah. Prince's is the way to go.
All right. Yeah,
excellent.
Well, thanks so much, Emma. We really do appreciate you coming on. And for all you Nashville Predators fans out there, you got to bookmark thehockeynews.com/NHL/Nashville Predators. Follow all of Emma's work. Coming up after the break, we've got Rapid Fire. It's Ryan's favorite time of the segment.
Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of The Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. And Ryan, that was an interesting interview with Emma just about this red-hot Nashville team.
Yes, and the hot chicken, because it kind of, I know Prince's is like the original. So that's like the big one. So there you go. That's what the locals go for.
I feel like such a noob now, because I'm just like, Hattie B's was the first and only place I'd ever go to.
Right. I went there during the draft because I got into town late. So there wasn't much of a lineup because it was like 9 at night. But maybe it wasn't the best idea to have hot chicken at 9 at night.
They have a spice rating there, and the hottest one is called Slap Your Mama Hot, because if you slap your mama, oh boy, you're in trouble.
That's right.
Eat that chicken.
I just go medium. I'm not trying to do any stunting here.
All right. Yeah. Well, we got no hot chicken available here, but we do have...
We got fire.
We got some fire. Our favorite topic of the show. Rapid fire.
Again, I don't know why you continue to lie to your poor viewers.
Hit us up with some questions, all right, producer Connor.
Look, not a lot happened this week. So instead of doing questions, tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. St. Patrick's Day themed, was he an NHLer?
Yes.
All right. So all of these players played for the Toronto St. Pats.
Oh, okay.
Which makes it even more difficult. Because
I would say so.
I would guess your expansive knowledge of the 1920s Toronto St. Pat's probably isn't the best.
Minimal.
But we'll see how you guys do.
All right.
Starting off, Ryan O'Shaughnessy.
Ryan O'Shaughnessy. Okay, as somebody named Ryan, I don't believe there were a lot of Ryans back then, so I'm going to say no.
Is it like a new name, like Haley or something?
It feels like even like the 80s was like the beginning of like Ryans.
I'm going to say he was. It sounds like an NHLer. But you now you're making me question how deep the
name
Ryan
goes. How deep the Ryan pool goes?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
It does not go that deep.
Oh, no.
Ryan O'Shaughnessy was a Britain's Got Talent contestant and Ireland's Eurovision representative in 2018.
Yeah.
Great song is that he performed.
Then
controversy, yeah. Next up, Howie Lockhart.
Howie Lockhart. I'm going to go yes on that one because...
Howie sounds like an old name.
It's got some old name to it. And, it, you know, Howie Morenz. He was an old-time player. So Howie Lockhart, that sounds like a St. Pat to me. I'm going to go yes.
Ryan's convincing me now. I kind of want to go with it. I'm going to say yes to Howie.
He was. He played for the St. Pat's Northern Fusiliers.
Fusiliers.
Yeah.
It's like Quebec, a military thing.
There you go. Quebec Bulldogs, Hamilton Tigers, and Boston Bruins. His nickname is Holes, sort of, because that was coined by Stan Fischler in the 1980s.
That is great. Wow.
Which is according to Wikipedia. So
gotcha.
How much we can trust it. And a book called The Klein and Reif Hockey Composium or Compendium. I don't know. It's also a Scottish name, not even Irish. There you go. Next up, George Carey.
George Carey. Ooh, that's tough. I'm going to go yes on that one. No rhyme or reason to it. I'm just going to go yes.
George Carey. I'm trying to think. Last time Connor like mistakenly put like I think Sting's name, so I'm thinking like is George Carey the real name of Bono or something?
Right, right.
I'm going to say no.
He was a hockey player.
Oh boy, I'm doing awful here.
Yeah, so far you're, I think, 1-3.
I'm undefeated.
Yep. Played for the St. Pat's, Quebec Bulldogs, Hamilton Tigers, and Calgary Tigers. Yeah. Born in Glasgow.
Okay.
So, Scottish guy.
I think that was my Scottish jig there.
There you go.
We just heard.
All right. Next up, Norman Shea.
Norman Shea.
Norman Shea.
I'm going to say no, because I feel like this is like a trick question where he didn't play for the St. Pat's. That's my logic. I don't have any rationale behind it, but I'm just trying to get into your psyche.
Norman Shea.
That's something you shouldn't try to do.
Probably not.
It doesn't sound like an athlete to me. Can't think of a guy, Norman, as a hockey player. I'm going to say no.
He was.
Oh,
played for the St. Pat's and Boston Bruins as both a defenseman and right winger.
Fair enough.
Next up, Jim Kane.
Jim Kane.
How you spell the last name?
C-A-I-N-E.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Jim Kane may or may not have been a hockey player. Okay. I'm going to go no on this one just because we haven't had enough no's yet.
You know what? Let's just keep this run of wrong answers going. I'm going to say yes.
All right.
Congratulations, Trakos. You are correct. Played for the St. Pat's and Montreal Maroons.
His
nickname was Dutch. And the final one, Frank Partridge.
Frank Partridge.
Pantridge.
Pantridge. Oh, that changes everything.
Yeah, I was going to say. Now I know for sure.
Yeah. I'm gonna say yes. Again, no logic to it.
I'm going to say no. He's probably a member of the Pantridge family.
Nice.
No, he was not a member of the Pantridge family. However, he wasn't a hockey player.
Oh.
He, in fact, invented the mobile defibrillator.
Oh.
And was a World War II veteran.
Probably used in rinks all over right now.
That's exactly.
Right. There we go. Okay, that was fun, Connor.
Good job.
Not so much fun for me, but more fun than...
Struggled a little bit there.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Okay, that's all the time we have, unfortunately. No more... guess that name. For the Hockey News pregame show, I'm Michael Trakos. That's Ryan Kennedy. Thank you to BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. See you next time at the rink, folks.